Hello, queers. You're listening to Movies a la Queer. This is Sarita Ramirez, and welcome back. Yes, we are in the middle of a pandemic, and it has been a really stressful year, so I am very grateful to continue to have this opportunity to talk movies with you. And yeah, let's just keep it going. Let's keep that same energy alive. On this episode, we'll be exploring a film that I did not expect to have the turns that it had. I did not hear a lot about this film. And in fact, I think I watched a trailer and soon forgot about it. I will say the themes in this film explores different types of affection, trauma, and of course, a little sprinkle of toxic machismo. The film we're talking about today is 2021's The Power of the Dog. The Power of the Dog is a 2021 Australian-New Zealand Western drama written and directed by Jane Campion. It stars Benedict Cumberbatch, Kirsten Dunst, Jesse Plemons, and Cody Smit-McPhee. The IMDb synopsis: charismatic rancher Phil Burbank inspires fear and awe in those around him. But when his brother brings home a new wife and her son, Phil torments them until he finds himself exposed to the possibility of love. Here's the trailer.
"25 years since our first run together. 1900 and nothing.
It's a long time.
What you doing?
Getting mixed up with her.
You are marvelous, Rose. We were married someday.
I wonder what little lady made these.
I did, sir.
Brother Phil?
Open up the gate. Let him out.
You sure he's not ready?
Go on, let him out.
He's just a man, Peter. Only another man.
A man's made by patience. The odds against him.
For what kind of man would I be if I did not help my mother?
Peter!
If I did not save her.
Sort of a lonesome place out here, Pete. Unless you get in the swing of things.
For this film, I'll be doing a very thorough, full recap. There will be some deep spoilers ahead, so if you haven't seen The Power of the Dog, I do advise you to pause this episode, go watch it, and then come back. But if you're like me, who gets excited at spoilers, then listen on. I'll never judge. So the film opens up in early 1920s Montana. We meet two brothers who own this wealthy ranch, Phil and George Burbank. Now, these two brothers could not be more different. George, he is kind, gentle-hearted, and what I assume to be the mathematical brains behind the ranch. He's in charge of the logistics, I would say. We usually see him dressed mostly in suits and doing his best to be part of society, making friends with the governor and his wife, and just being a whole, well-rounded, kind individual. And then, well, there's Phil, who is the complete opposite. Phil is more rough around the edges, and by rough, I mean sandpaper, okay? We usually see him out on the ranch with the workers, handling the horses and the cattle. He doesn't even like to wear gloves. Phil is also quite mean and intimidating and can be quite belittling. He likes to be the one in charge, and of course he is the one in charge, but he likes to make sure that everyone knows that. And again, not because he owns the ranch, but I like to think he just loves the attention. He's a bit of a performer, Phil. He enjoys making the workers laugh and showing off his skills out in the ranch, and also likes to be a bit of a mentor to some of the other cattle heads, cow heads, ranch hands, you know what I mean. At night, we see how the two brothers, who live in a pretty big house slash mansion, prefer to sleep in the same bedroom with one another on what looks like to be twin beds placed side by side, not super close, I guess, in one scene and then on another scene, it's like pushed in together. It is a bit weird, especially because these are two grown male adults, and I would think that they would utilize the other bedrooms in the space, but they don't. So we get the sense that the brothers are very close, but they have a bit of a toxic relationship. There's no doubt that there's a lot of love and respect there between them, but Phil kind of always wants to put George down whenever he gets the chance. Phil will call George fatso and call him other nasty names and pretty much always second guesses George's decisions. So George and Phil and the rest of the ranch heads, they decide to do a cattle drive. And before you ask me, I have no idea what it is. I think I had to Google it. And it's when people at a ranch, they take their herd and cattle and they do some type of cross-acre traveling to another part of their property. Honestly, I don't know. But anyway, they go on this cattle drive, Phil and George. And they decide to stop at a local inn that has also this attached restaurant to it. And there they meet Rose Gordon, who we learn is a widow, and her son Peter. Peter quickly becomes the target of Phil's hostility at the restaurant. Phil makes fun of how Peter stands, calls him a sissy, how he needs to become human, whatever that means. And of course, all of the ranch heads at the table laugh because it's Phil and he's just making fun of this innocent boy for no reason. Well, everyone except George. After dinner, George stays back to pay for the bill, and he sees that Peter's mom, Rose, is a bit upset. And according to Rose, she felt sad and felt humiliated, not because she was embarrassed of Peter, quite the opposite. She did not appreciate how Phil just made her son feel completely inadequate. And for this, George apologizes for his brother's behavior. And after that, George and Rose kind of developed this really nice relationship, or should I say courtship, back in those days. George respectfully goes down to the inn quite often to help Rose out at the inn restaurant, and even goes out one evening to help out when her guests are being rowdy and drinking and just doing the most. Over the next few days, and what we can assume are weeks, Phil notices how George has been quite taken with Rose, seeing that he drives down to the inn and helping her and getting, you know, really chummy with her. And this actually upsets Phil. He doesn't want to see his brother coupled up with someone. And he actually lashes out at one of his horses, and it's a very difficult scene to watch, so trigger warning there. But again, it's showing us how emotionally unstable and abusive Phil is. We know that, or at least we can get the sense that Phil is very visibly threatened by Rose and the possibility that she'll join their family and kind of disrupt their routine. And what do you know? She does. Rose sells the inn and the restaurant, and she sends her son Peter away to college to study medicine and pretty much moves into the big house where George and Phil live. And of course, now George isn't sleeping in the bedroom with Phil anymore. Now he's gonna sleep in a big bedroom with his wife. And Phil hates her. He makes it seem like Rose married George for the money, not that she actually is attracted to George in any way. And side note, Kirsten Dunst and Jesse Plemons, who play Rose and George, are together in real life, and it is very cute, just putting that out there. So with all this new time in her hands, Rose really struggles. We learned that her deceased husband had a severe drinking problem and committed suicide a few years before that. So it's possible to imagine that Rose never really fully processed her late husband's death, having to keep the inn and the restaurant running smoothly, paying the bills to make sure that she and Peter survive. And now at the ranch, where she has money and she doesn't have to really work, she has housekeepers and cooks to pretty much do everything for her, Rose is struggling. She develops somewhat of a drinking problem herself due to the frequent torments that now she's receiving from Phil. Because Phil is emotionally abusing her. He's psychologically fucking with her, is what we see. And even though George is ever the sweetheart, he is gone a lot. He does a lot of deals. He's, again, the logistics guy out of the two of them. So it's either that he doesn't witness the emotional and psychological torture that Phil is doing to Rose, or he is somewhat just really oblivious to it. During the summer, Rose invites her son Peter to join them at the ranch during his summer break from college. And again, Peter is her, let's say, soft son. And I'm only saying soft because that is kind of how the film and the direction of the film and the story and Phil's opinion of him is how I can draw him for you. And again, Peter, although he's made fun of a lot by Phil and the rest of the other ranch heads that just pretty much are Phil's minions, Peter actually isn't a soft person in any way. Yes, he may be what is considered effeminate or whatever, because he's what, slender and lanky and doesn't have these rough ranch hands, nor interested in Phil's rugged lifestyle. But I wouldn't call him soft, and we know this because we see that there's a time that he catches this really beautiful bunny rabbit and he surprises his mom with it. And mind you, this is a moment that she's very drunk and she's kind of in a really tough spot, and he does see this, but he tries to ignore it. And we're thinking, okay, he obviously witnesses this part of Rose, but he's not trying to make a big deal out of it. But in the next scene, we see that Peter actually ends up killing the rabbit, and he's dissecting the rabbit in the room on the table in the name of science, he says. It's quite bizarre. I don't know who has the stomach for things like that. And Peter also sees, like I mentioned before, that Rose is falling deeply into alcohol abuse, and it's due to her unhappiness at the house, which is pretty much under Phil's rule. So one day, Peter finds a secret hideout spot hidden behind some branches that reveal a pathway to this dislocated wooden area. There, he sees Phil bathing in this pond that he, well, just comes across, and he's wearing this handkerchief that has the initials BH on them. And now, who the heck is BH? Well, we learned that BH is Bronco Henry, and Bronco Henry is, or was, this legendary ranchman that mentored both Phil and George. And any chance that Phil can mention Bronco Henry and his greatness, he does. Phil even keeps somewhat of a shrine of this Bronco Henry at the main barn with a plaque and his saddle and everything. So again, at the pond where Peter notices Phil is like stroking himself and getting all sensual with this handkerchief, Phil notices Peter and actually runs out from the water screaming at him that he's gonna like beat his ass if he catches him, which he doesn't. And after this, things take a turn. An interesting turn. A day or two goes by after the whole pond incident, and something changes within Phil. We see him wanting to get closer to Peter for some reason. He calls out to him one day while the other ranch heads are shouting names again at Peter, like fag and sissy, but instead, Phil extends somewhat of an olive branch to Peter and offers to teach him things around the ranch, like how to ride a horse. And Peter, we see, is kind of excited, and he's like, yeah, sure, I'll agree to do this with you. And again, the two become quite close, Phil and Peter, much to Rose's dismay. Phil teaches Peter how to ride the horse and pushes him to get better at it, while some of the other ranchers laugh at his expense. But in time, Peter does get better at horseback riding, and even learns a few things about the cows that Phil and his men tend to, like how, although it's rumored that wolves are probably the biggest reason why there's a lot of dead cows at the ranch, actually that's not true. Most of the reason that the cows die are from a deadly infection called anthrax. And Phil doesn't handle those cow bodies because that infection can pass on to humans and can actually kill us as well. Now you're probably asking yourself, why are you telling me this, Sarita? Well, this becomes pertinent later. So we then see Peter one afternoon riding his horse at a nearby hill by himself, and he comes across a dead corpse of a cow. So he dismounts his horse, he puts on his gloves that he takes out of his pocket, and then he pulls out a knife. And with that knife, he begins to slowly cut into the skin of the cow, kind of like a surgeon making that first incision. We don't know what he's doing with this cow, but we're just probably thinking maybe he's doing the same thing he's doing with the rabbit at his desk. He's probably just trying to dissect this body of a cow. We then see Rose, who is still super, super upset. And again, she's really struggling with her alcoholism now. Time has passed and it's not getting any better. And again, she's super upset that Phil and Peter have gotten close. And she's just not doing well. While on one of those binges that she was experiencing, she decides to do something that would purposely upset Phil, which was to sell off his precious cowhide. Now, this part of the film is quite confusing because we don't understand why he cared so much about his cowhide. He could have sold this. Apparently, he likes to strip the skin off of healthy dead cows, and then he uses maybe like 5% of them, and then he burns the rest. Now, if any of you have experience with cowhide or ranches or cattle farms, let me know what the purpose of this is. But either way, Rose sells the cowhide to some men at a nearby reservation, and Phil is super fucking upset. He says that, no, Rose did this on purpose. And he was going to use this cowhide to make a braided ranch rope for Peter before he goes back to college. Because again, Phil and Peter are like besties now. So super mad and throwing things around in a huff, George, his brother, tries to calm Phil and says, listen, it's fine. Rose is sick. She's just not doing well. She didn't do this on purpose. Please don't be mad. I'm going to get her well. You know, I'm going to get her cared for. She's fine. I'm sorry. And then not long after that, Peter comes into the barn and he tries to console Phil too and says, hey, listen, I'm sorry about my mom. She doesn't understand. She is really sick. And then Peter reveals to Phil that he has some cowhide himself. And Phil is like, wait, why? Why do you have this cowhide? What are you talking about? And he says, yeah, I wanted to be like you, Phil. So I found some cowhide and I've been saving it and trying to make a rope like you were trying to teach me because I want to be like you. And at that moment, Phil just looks at Peter with these different sets of eyes, and Phil thanks him. Phil thanks Peter and tells him, listen, this relationship, things are going to be better now between us. Like, no one else is going to fuck with you. You and me are good. We're Gucci, and things are going to be good from now on. I promise. And Peter's like, thanks, man. I appreciate that. Of course, they don't sound like this. This is the 1920s in Montana, but you get the drill. So we then see this interesting scene where Phil is softening the cowhide by placing it in the water, which he's going to use to start his rope lasso thing that he shows Peter earlier in the film. And then we also see that he had this wound on his hand and there's a bit of blood still coming out of it. So the blood is like mixing in the water along with the cowhide. And that night, the two become even closer. Peter asks Phil about, okay, who the hell was Bronco Henry and what was so special about him? I mean, he says that again in a nicer tone, but come on. And Phil tells him that Bronco was an amazing person. He was a mentor. He was like a best friend. He even saved Phil's life once when Phil caught some type of illness out on a trip that they did together. And to save Phil, Bronco Henry had to use his body, like place his body against Phil's to warm him up so he could come down from it. And Peter pretty much asked him the same question I would ask, is like, were y'all naked? When y'all were naked, weren't you? To which Phil doesn't respond, but he does chuckle and doesn't say anything. So to us, it affirms, yes, Bronco Henry and Phil probably had some type of romantic thing happening. And with this, Peter, you know, he starts rolling up a cigarette for Phil, and then he lights it up, takes a drag. Phil is over there in the corner tying up this rope in this conversation, but things get a little sensual and a little intimate between the two of them, because then Peter walks up to Phil and like puts the cigarette in his mouth, and then Phil takes a drag and then like lets Peter take the cigarette again. And again, a very intimate experience that we're witnessing here. An intimate moment. The next morning, George and Peter are at the dining table, and they're kind of waiting for Phil to come down for breakfast, and he doesn't. And it's a bit weird because Phil does like to get up. He is a ranch man, okay? He gets up, he knows what time he needs to be up so he can start his work and get shit moving. But he doesn't come down. So George goes upstairs, looks for Phil, and then sees that Phil is in bed and he's actually not looking too well. So he's like, listen, let's get you dressed. We're gonna get you to the doctor and see what's going on. But not before Phil asks George, like, hey, where's Peter? Where's the boy? And George is like, oh, he's in his room. Come on, let's go. We got to go to the doctor. You're like, you look like shit right now. But Phil's holding this finished rope lasso that he was making for Peter yesterday. Again, this is the one that he promised to give Peter before Peter returns to college. But George is like, you'll give this to him later. Come on. And then we see that Peter is watching George and Phil drive away from the bedroom window. And then we see George is choosing a casket for Phil because, yes, Phil dies, okay? It's kind of shocking. No one knows why. And at the funeral, everyone is sad for the most part, but no one is like super grieving either. Like no one is like wailing, not even George and Phil's parents. No one is like, my baby. Everyone is just somber and respectful. And Phil's doctor walks up to George and is like, you know what? I just still can't believe this happened, but I do have a theory that he died from anthrax because it was just too sudden and he just showed some weird symptoms. I think it was anthrax. And George is like, no. Phil promised me and everyone he just wasn't the type to touch those anthrax cows, and he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't handle them. Yeah, he didn't wear gloves. Yeah, he was very like macho. I can do all of this with my raw hands, but he would never touch those cows. So that's a bit of a mystery. How would he have died from anthrax? Well, later that evening, we see Peter sitting on the bed, still at the ranch house, and he's reading off a quote from the Bible. And this quote says, "Deliver my soul from the sword, my darling from the power of the dog." We then see Peter is holding on to that rope that Phil made for him a few nights before, that same rope that he really wanted to get to him before he went to college. But then we see that Peter is actually wearing gloves while holding this rope. He then hears George and Rose pull up in their car, and he watches them from his bedroom window. And again, although George is, you can tell he's sad, he's holding Rose in a very loving, affectionate way, and Rose turns to him and kisses him, and to which Peter, who's looking down at them, he smiles. And that's the end of The Power of the Dog. Okay, so what did it all mean? Did Peter kill Phil? Was Phil in love with Peter? If Peter did kill Phil, why? And what does power of the dog even mean, as well as that Bible verse? Like, what is it? After I watched this film, I was just asking myself, okay, what was the point of this film? And let me just say this. Let this be my disclaimer. I am not a religious person, and I admit I don't understand anything from the Bible verse, nor the significance of it and how it plays in the film. However, doing some research, it's extremely fascinating. I will link the resources that I found that explain the Psalms 22 verse in detail, but for now, I'll just give you a bit of a rundown. So this Bible passage, the words written, it asks God, or the sword, to deliver the punishment to the sinners. Now, I do believe this is also in the context of Jesus Christ and those that betrayed him and put him on the cross. So in the film, in The Power of the Dog, the sinners, or sinner in this context, we can assume is Phil, who would just go out of his way to torment Rose, to belittle her and to belittle Peter, and to really just go out of his way to make George the butt of the joke. And he was the sinner. In the film, however, it's revealed that Phil died by a possible anthrax infection. most likely contracted by the infected rawhide that we saw Peter slicing earlier in the film. Because we do see Phil explaining to Peter early on that, you know, he doesn't handle that cattle either, and that cattle that die from anthrax, he doesn't touch, he just burns them. And again, we also know this, that Phil has this stupid habit of not wearing gloves when he's castrating his living cows, so he just doesn't know proper hygiene. But again, this is the 1920s, so maybe they didn't know any better. According to writer Tamal Kundu at The Cinemaholic, Peter is the sword in this Bible verse. He delivers Phil's death on his own will, taking into account the pain that Phil has caused his mother and really how he disrupts the possible happiness that his mother Rose can have with George. And he fully knows that things would just be so much better if Phil were gone. But he plays onto this role of being this kind, gentle, soft boy because he can hide his intentions far easier with that. And again, from early on in the film, we know that Peter is very creative. He made these beautiful flowers with recycled paper. He is extremely, extremely bright. And yes, he is courteous and he's friendly, but he's also very quick-witted. And he was the one that found his father's dead body. And he was the one that cut it down, as he said, so that his mother wouldn't see it. We even witness him cutting open and dissecting the corpse of a rabbit and not even being fazed, because to him, he wants to be a doctor and perhaps a surgeon. So he wants to know what are the innards of these bodies that he'll be handling. He's not only tougher than we think, but it captures that not everything is as what it seems. Phil himself is a character that boasts about his strength and his aptitude and how he learned so much from Bronco Henry, and yet he's actually very insecure. He's visibly threatened by George finding a wife and moving on without him. And Rose, who we see plunges into alcohol abuse, is probably processing for the first time the death of her late husband and now living in a home where she needs to keep herself busy. She can't do anything but process his death. George even buys her this really nice piano for her to practice, but she's so shaken with like Phil's obvious attempts at ridiculing her that she can't even perform well in front of their dinner guests one night. And again, George is like fucking oblivious to Phil's abuses. At least we want to think he is, because he tries to introduce the family into society, but it's just not working. Rose is not doing well, and she just gets worse and worse as the film progresses. And when Phil discovers and witnesses that Rose is abusing alcohol, he whistles tauntingly at her from a bedroom window in one scene, because to him, he takes enjoyment from seeing how much she's torturing her. Now, Phil's demise was cruel, but could we say it was done for the greater good? Phil was himself self-tortured, again, going out of his way to torment his family and his sister-in-law's son. I mean, he was a shitty person. He was a shitty character. The Power of the Dog was written and directed by Jane Campion, who also happened to be the creator behind the Australian drama Top of the Lake. Now, for those that didn't see Top of the Lake, I highly recommend it if you're a fan of dark and somber mystery dramas. But elements of Top of the Lake are seen here in The Power of the Dog. The dialogue is also dry, but there's always a meaning behind every sentence delivered by these characters. It's like a double-edged meaning, in a way. There are also twists that keep you at the edge of your seat and just, again, make the whole viewing experience worthwhile. When I finished watching The Power of the Dog, I will be honest, I didn't feel justified or I didn't feel satisfied with the ending. If anything, I didn't really feel resolved. There was a great resolution. Yes, Phil dies, and now George and Rose can have somewhat of a happy life together. But then I think back, it's the 1920s in Montana. What else is happy over there? I don't know. If anything, I walked away with the message that despite your best assumption or inkling on someone, in the end, you never really know. To watch The Power of the Dog, it is available to stream on Netflix. Thank you for watching Movies a la Queer. Don't forget, if you haven't done so already, check out the trailer link and all resources that I've mentioned in this episode within the show notes. Also follow on Instagram for the latest news and updates. And please, if you have time, leave a 5-star rating on Spotify now that it's available. and on Apple Podcasts or wherever that you listen to Movies a la Queer. This is Sarita Ramirez. Stay safe, warm, and I'll see you next week with another episode. Bye.